have witnessed your glory, all this favor you show me. When you gave it to me, I had to.
You are listening to the WGXC Acre 90.7 on your FM dial and WGXC.org on your smartphone or computer.
WGXC is turning 10 this year, and we have all sorts of special events for you to tune in or turn out. WGXC's 10th anniversary broadcast is February 26, 2021, 10 years to the day that WGXC switched its 3,300 watts of power on the air with Community Voices making community radio for the community. Tune in from 7 to 9 p.m. February 26th for the WGXC 10th anniversary broadcast and awards show. Then in the entire month of April, tune in or turn out to the Incident Report. The Incident Report is at 348 Warren Street in Hudson. And all month in April, you can see F.T. Marinetti's and Pino Masanada's La Radia Futurist Manifesto from October 1933 on display. Then in May, tune in to another special WGXC 10th anniversary concert and film performance at the Greenville Drive-In on Route 32 in Greenville in Greene County from 7:30 to 11 p.m. Turn out or tune in to the Greenville Drive-In to hear Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields perform, Anna Frizz, Brian DeWan, Jen Cutler, Jess Spear, and others at the Greenville Drive-In May 26th. Then in October, John Cage's Rose Art Mix will be realized by artist Aaron Dillaway at the John Cage Trust in Red Hook, Northern Dutchess County. Tune in or turn out to any of these events for WGXC's 10th anniversary on the air, or make a sustainable donation at wavefarm.org/donate during the WGXC 10th anniversary pledge drive. Tune in or turn out to 10 years of local radio on the local radio, 90.7 FM.
WGXE always needs computer donations. If you have an old one you don't need and it is either a Macintosh 2011 or newer, 2.0 GHz or faster CPU, dual core or more, or Windows 2012 or newer, 2.4 GHz or faster CPU, dual core or more, email info@wgxc.org for more information. WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Food New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. Bernadette Hogan, Carl Campanelle, and Bruce Golding report in the New York Post that one of Governor Andrew Cuomo's top aides, Melissa DeRosa, apologized to other Democratic lawmakers on an audio recording about the state's handling of COVID-19 deaths in nursing homes. DeRosa said that in August, as President Donald Trump threatened a Department of Justice investigation, and I quote, "we froze," end quote, out of fear that the true numbers would, and I quote, "be used against us," end quote, by federal prosecutors. While some Republicans quickly went to, and I quote, "impeach Cuomo," end quote, after reading the story, it does not say much new. Since long before August, many Democrats and Republicans have criticized how the Cuomo administration seemed to manipulate the reporting of COVID-19 deaths between nursing homes and hospitals. DeRosa's audio admission does not address all that, saying instead, and I quote, "because then we were in a position where we weren't sure if what we were going to give to the Department of Justice or what we give to you guys, what we start saying, was going to be used against us, while we weren't sure if there was going to be an investigation," end quote. Cuomo's administration is known for rare apologies, and DeRosa offered one on the recording. She said, and I quote, "so we do apologize," end quote. She went on to say, and I quote, "I do understand the position that you were put in. I know that it is not fair. It was not our intention to put you in that political position with the Republicans," end quote. Last month, Attorney General Letitia James released a damning report estimating that the deaths of nursing home residents in hospitals would boost the total nursing home death tally by more than 50%. Health Commissioner Howard Zucker then released figures showing the total for New York COVID-19 nursing home deaths was 12,743 as of January 19th, up from 8,711 deaths New York officials previously acknowledged. And you can read more about that story in the New York Post.
Leila Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the resolution approved last month by the Hudson Common Council requiring the city police department to provide monthly reports on the gender and racial identity and other details of anyone stopped by police will now be rewritten. Nationwide racial profiling and the council requesting a 25-mile-per-hour speed limit in Hudson were cited as the reasons behind the measure. Police Chief L. Edward Moore was not consulted before the resolution was passed. The police department does not oppose reporting data. They just need to figure out how to make it work, Moore said. The department reports racial traffic violation data with a sample of tickets, but not all. Moore said he believes the department's available sampling of ticket data is adequate, but he understands what the council is looking for. Quote, "the resolution came out, and it was a matter of definition and trying to figure out what policy we could hammer out to get the information that the city council wanted us to capture," unquote, Moore said. Hudson Common Council President Tom DiPietro said he hopes to have it revised by February 16th formal Common Council meeting. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Natasha Vaughn and Aaliyah Schneider are reporting for Columbia Green Media. Former Hudson Police Commissioner and Chatham Police Chief Peter Volkman pleaded guilty February 11th to illegally collecting nearly $93,000 from the Village of Chatham and the state pension system. Volkman, 57, a resident of Stuyvesant, was arraigned on charges filed by the New York State Police following an investigation by the State Comptroller's Office, Columbia County District Attorney's Office, and the New York State Police. Volkman pleaded guilty to taking state and local pension funds in the amount of $74,222 and $18,607 from the village by falsifying mileage vouchers and other reimbursements. Chatham Mayor John Howe said the plea effectively terminates Volkman's tenure as an officer and as a chief of police. He must also pay restitution in the amount of $92,829. State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli said in a statement, and I quote, "instead of upholding the law, Volkman, the chief law enforcement officer of the village, defrauded the state's retirement system and his community," end quote. He went on to say taxpayers have the right to expect their public officials, including law enforcement officials, will act with honesty and integrity, end quote.
Volkman was arraigned on various charges, including two counts of public corruption, second-degree corrupting of the government, and second-degree grand larceny. He pleaded guilty to one count of fourth-degree grand larceny and official misconduct. Columbia County Assistant District Attorney Ryan Carty said he was arraigned in Columbia County Court under Superior Court information. DiNapoli's office said Volkman was double-dipping the state pension system. Carty said, and I quote, as a result of acts of omission, Mr. Volkman was able to steal $74,222 from the New York State pension system, end quote. According to DiNapoli, he hid public source income from 19 municipalities and school districts in excess of the statutory limit by funneling the earnings through a private business. House said financial irregularities involving Volkman came to light in a routine village review in February 2020. Volkman was placed on administrative leave from the Chatham Police Department last September after the village was served with a search warrant related to the investigation. The chief was suspended from all duties at that time. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting that the State Public Service Commission has approved the New York Energy Solution Project, a 54.5-mile, 345-kilovolt transmission line at a cost of $530 million. The line will start in Rensselaer County and extend to Dutchess County, beginning in the town of Skodak and on to Stuyvesant, Stockport, Ghent, Claverick, Livingston, Gallatin, and Claremont in Columbia County, and the towns of Milan, Clinton, and Pleasant Valley in Dutchess County. The line, owned by New York Transco, is intended to, quote, speed the flow of energy to high-demand markets and consumers downstate, unquote. The project will upgrade and replace existing 80-year-old structures with about 230 fewer, more modern structures. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Nick Reisman is reporting for State of Politics. New York lawmakers this week introduced a bill intended to block state and local governments from providing resources or personnel to federal immigration enforcement officials. The measure would also bar the disclosure of information deemed sensitive to federal immigration officials as well. State Senator Julia Salazar said, and I quote, "We cannot allow for our state and local governments to be complicit in the systematic abuse that ICE inflicts on our communities, including preventing people from accessing essential services. This is why it's urgent that we pass New York for All, our legislation that will prohibit New York's local and state law enforcement agencies from conspiring with ICE," end quote. Lawmakers previously approved, and Governor Andrew M. Cuomo signed into law, a bill that bars federal immigration officers from courthouses in New York. The push to restrict the federal government's immigration enforcement efforts were heightened during President Donald Trump's term. But lawmakers, as well as advocates who support the measure, point to ongoing concerns and mistrust within the immigrant community. Read the full story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Sarah Trafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Yet another local village court will soon be dissolved. The Catskill Village Board recently approved a resolution granting the Catskill Town Court jurisdiction over enforcement of village laws. The resolution is one of the final steps in the village court consolidation with the town. Dissolving the village court has been in the works since the beginning of 2020. Quote, "We had to give the okay to allow the town to do our court from here on in," unquote, said Village Vice President Joseph Kozlowski. Quote, "We're consolidating and moving everything over at the end of March. Starting April 1st, our courts will be with the town, and town judges would handle all of our cases," unquote. The merger will save the village an estimated $30,000 to $40,000 a year, Kozlowski said. As many as three village employees will lose their jobs because of the merger, he said. The current village justices, William Rick Jacobs and Richard Poloni, also serve as judges for the town, Kozlowski said. Terms for both expire in March, so the timing was ideal, he said. "The village is exploring the idea of maintaining a traffic court," Kozlowski said. "A clerk would handle traffic tickets and collect fines," he said. "Any contested tickets would be referred to the town court. The village will be looking at the traffic court in Hudson as an example," he added. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper. The Chatham Village Board voted unanimously in February in a February 8th online meeting to pass a local law eliminating the village court and the position of village judge. The court will remain open until early April, when the term of the current judge, James Borgia Foster, expires. The village board held a public hearing on the local law before the board's regular meeting. One resident, Lyle Locke, a former village board member, asked why the board planned to close the court and whether it was for financial reasons. Mayor John Howe said the court was previously sustained by the revenues it brought in, but in recent years, court finances have been, and I quote, pretty much a wash, end quote. However, as of last year, and I quote, we were in the red, end quote. In 2020, the court was forced to shut down due to the pandemic, resulting in no revenue from court activity. In addition to the cost of the court, the mayor said the village paid two police officers to be at the court when cases were being heard. Tickets and other court issues in the village will now go to the town courts in Chatham and Ghent. Part of the village is located in the town of Chatham and part in the town of Ghent. Of the four villages in Columbia County, only Kinderhook and Philmont still have their own courts. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper. Aaliyah Snyder is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Galvin Foundation housing developments planned for North 7th Avenue and Upper State Street on Hudson's north side do not have on-site parking, leading to an ongoing conversation about where future residents will park. As a result, the foundation will conduct another depot district parking assessment after criticism of its initial study, which cited the number of available parking spaces for one night only. Although the plans for the depot district to minimize on-site parking is in accordance with the Hudson Comprehensive Plan, there is no on-site parking to be provided for 138 new units in the area, raising the question, where will everyone park? At a meeting of the City Planning Board this week, Dan Kent, Galvin Foundation Vice President of Initiatives, mentioned that renting spaces from the city's Columbia Street Municipal Lot and One Hudson City Center were possible options. The foundation hired Mark Nadalny of Crichton Manning Engineering, LLP, to conduct a traffic and parking study to assess where residents of the planned buildings would park. Galvin has now asked Crichton Manning Engineering to conduct a follow-up assessment based on feedback from the planning board and the Hudson Fire Department, Kent said. Kent wrote, and I quote, "We are now in the process of identifying creative solutions for off-street parking, which include an assessment of available parking in the vicinity of the project site," end quote. The planning board agreed to begin the public hearing process March 9th. Kent said the results of the follow-up parking study and detailed parking recommendations will be completed in time for the hearing. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Sunday there's a chance of snow in the morning. Probably less than a half an inch, though, with a high of 32 on Sunday, mostly cloudy skies Sunday night, a low around 17. On Monday, snow is again likely, mainly after 1 p.m., with a high near 27 and a low around 21. In fact, the National Weather Service has issued a winter storm watch in effect from Monday at 10 a.m. till Tuesday at 4 p.m. On Tuesday, snow and sleet is predicted, becoming all snow after 7 a.m. with a high of 28 and a 90% chance of precipitation. Tuesday night should be mostly cloudy with a low around 10. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Radio for open ears. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Sunday there's a chance of snow in the morning, probably less than a half an inch, though, with a high of 32 on Sunday, mostly cloudy skies Sunday night, a low around 17. On Monday, snow is again likely, mainly after 1 p.m., with a high near 27 and a low around 21. In fact, the National Weather Service has issued a winter storm watch in effect from Monday at 10 a.m. till Tuesday at 4 p.m. On Tuesday, snow and sleet is predicted, becoming all snow after 7 a.m. with a high of 28 and a 90% chance of precipitation. Tuesday night should be mostly cloudy with a low around 10. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Radio for open ears. WGXC turns 10 this February, and our 10th anniversary pledge drive is coming to you soon. We're asking you to become a sustaining supporter to make sure the community has access to its own airwaves for another 10 years of community broadcasting. If you like what you hear on WGXC, make a donation at WGXC.org and make it a sustaining donation. Something like 17 cents a day or $5 a month will help keep community radio on the airwaves. At least this one sliver, 90.7 FM, where all are welcome. WGXC.org/donate.
Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Sabisha Friedberg of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Columbia Greene Community College, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena. I am from Hudson. I forgot what I was going to say for a second.
I'm Georgia, and I am from Hudson, somewhere around Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Bookish things.
I've indoctrinated another person into saying books we love, books we hate. The tradition continues.
Yes. Passed on.
I learned that in between the sessions. I started to notice a pattern.
I'm going
to pick up on it.
I need to look up. I'm going to do some research and try to figure out when we first started saying those words.
Yeah, how did we even come up with that?
They were saying it. I learned it from someone who was older than me who used to be on the show, and apparently they learned it from another person, so it's been going on for a while.
Yeah, so this month, WGXC is celebrating 10 years of being on the radio. So the station first launched, I think it was February 26th. And what year would have that been? 2011? And my friend Quinn and I started doing a radio show right when the station first launched. We were part of like the launch event. And so we started doing a weekly radio show where we talked about all sorts of different things, but primarily books. And then eventually we decided that our show was going to be focused on books.
I have one question. Did you say bookish things at the beginning with her?
I believe so. That's what I need to do some research. I'm going to figure out when we started saying books we love, books we hate, bookish things. But I'm pretty sure that we started off saying books we love, books we're currently reading, and bookish things. And then at some point it became Books We Love, Books We Hate.
Books We Love, Books We Hate.
Unfortunately, that part did not start when I started ranting about Old Man of the Sea. I wish I could take credit for that, but we were already talking about books we hate.
the dislike of Old Man in the Sea goes really far back on the show. It has a long history of being despised by Bound.
Good.
I haven't ever read Old Man on the Sea.
You're going to have to, and it's going to be terrible.
There's one Bound by Books co-host that's enjoyed it, and that was Antonia. And everybody else was like, oh, it's the worst.
It's so boring.
I do like books that other people find really boring. But sometimes I do.
Funny thing is, it's a short story. It's barely 100 pages long. And it's so boring that even though it was only 100 pages long, it took me a week because I just couldn't tolerate it for long enough to read it all in one sitting. It was so boring.
Sometimes if there's a really boring beginning of the book, I'm like, okay, come on, Georgia, you could get through this. Just get through this and you'll get to the juicy part. But once or twice there was no juicy part. It's just boredom.
I've gotten through books that have bad beginnings or character protagonists that I don't really like before. I mean, Young Elites, when I first started reading that, I hated the main character, and by the end, I loved her. But Old Man in the Sea is not one of those books.
Is that about an old man who drowns in the sea?
No, it would be more exciting if it was about that. It's about a guy, this old man, who goes out into the ocean and chases a marlin, which is a really, really massive fish, for days. And you'd think, like, you'd look at the cover, and the cover is this really, like, action-packed picture of this guy, like, lassoing this, that's not the right word, but you know what I mean, this marlin on his fishing hook, and the marlin is like jumping out of the water and there's like waves all around him. The book does not live up to that. The book is this man chasing a marlin for days, and it's bad. It's not good.
Imagine if he was lassoing the fish. Maybe then it would be more exciting.
Oh my god, it would be so much more exciting. I literally just have a grudge against Ernest Hemingway now because I tried to read some of his other stuff. And they're all the same. And he was also a poacher, so I don't like him anyway.
An author who's a poacher? Odd.
I don't know if it was considered poaching back when he was doing it, but he hunted lions, and I don't like lions. I like lions. I don't like it when people hunt like big cats.
Lions
like that,
have always been one of my absolute favorite animals. For a while, they are my favorite. For a while, I mean my entire life. They've never gone off of my top two favorite animals list ever.
What's the other?
Still in my top twos. My top twos have always been the exact same. Owls and lions. Never owls. Changed.
Those are both pretty cool animals.
I gained a new appreciation for owls recently for a reason. I don't know. I've just become really interested in them for some reason. But I also recently learned that big cats can meow. And that fact almost killed me. It is the cutest thing ever. Because cheetahs will actually purr, and they'll purr and meow just like a house cat will if they want to.
What?
And it's just really cute.
Can lions meow?
Yeah. They don't always roar. Sometimes they will like make a little like mewing sound like a house cat would.
Here, hold on.
And it just sounds more aggressive.
Giant light off lights up. See back there, I've always loved lions.
So. Oh, you have a lion picture.
Yes.
Lion. That's so cute.
About the Disney princesses, I've watched a lot more now. All that I really watched was like Tangled, Frozen, Cinderella. Those are the only ones that I've watched. I've watched pretty much every one of them made now because my little sister's obsessed with Disney princesses. I mean, I is obsessed with Frozen. I like Tangled, but I was as obsessed with it as Frozen. But my little sister's obsessed in everyone. Princess and the Frog.
It's a generational thing, I think. It depends on what time you grow up, because Disney's never going to stop making Disney princesses. And depending on what age you are, depends on which one you're obsessed with. Because I was actually not obsessed with Beauty and the Beast as a kid. I was obsessed with The Little Mermaid. I was one of those kids that wanted to be a mermaid. I wanted to be a mermaid so bad. Aww. Little me was desperate to be a mermaid. I wanted to buy those really expensive like mermaid tails that you can use in the pool. I was obsessed.
So for our listeners out there who might be confused on why we're talking about Disney princesses, before we got on the radio, we were catching up about Amelia's dad's efforts to watch all of the Disney movies on Disney Plus in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
So that's where this comes from.
He had to watch a lot of Beauty and the Beast content in a row, and it was very entertaining to watch him struggle through it because he does not like Beauty and the Beast.
To watch every single thing on there, like every single bit of content?
He wants to. He's skipping over the shows for now, like the multi-episode shows, and watching only movies right now, but eventually he will go back and watch the shows.
I just realized something, because Disney Plus has like tween shows for kids my age, but also ones for ages of younger siblings, like younger kids, so your dad might have to watch Dot McStuffins.
I would almost respect him if he went through that. I mean, I do respect him. He's my dad, but like, I'd have newfound respect if he was willing to struggle through shows like Mickey Mouse Clubhouse and Dot McStuffins. Because if he wants to watch all the content on Disney Plus, he's gonna have to eventually watch those.
My little sister loves Disney princesses. She used to love Little Mermaid, but then one time she found Ursula scary and just turned it off and never came back to it.
I've definitely encountered movies that were probably meant for children that scared me. This kind of also relates back to books, if we want to actually talk about what this show is named after. I read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the book, when I was like younger. And the book is weird. The book is really weird and really frightening compared to the movie without Johnny Depp. And the movie with Johnny Depp is scarier than the book and the other movie. My parents said that I saw this at a drive-in. They said I saw the version with Johnny Depp at a drive-in. I don't remember that. I remember seeing it in a theater and crawling under the seats to try and like hide because it scared me so much, but apparently it wasn't a drive-in. I don't remember that at all. I remember vividly being in a movie theater and trying to crawl under the seats because the scene where Violet turns into a blueberry and the scene where Augustus gets sucked up the chocolate freaked me out. It freaked me out.
Oh,
and the way Johnny Depp looked also freaked me out because Johnny Depp is scary sometimes.
I have a question. Which one was that? Was it Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
It was the version with Johnny Depp. I know they're making a new movie called Wonka about Willy Wonka, but that's not out yet. So yeah, it was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. The stage play is scarier than all of them put together, but I'm not going to get into that.
Is it the one that looks a little newer? It looks a little
less. Yes, it's the new one.
Oh, yeah. I only watched the old one. I really like the old one.
Yeah, the old one is fine. The old one is perfectly fine. I don't appreciate the new one whatsoever. I still have not watched it to this day. I can't bring myself to.
Yeah. And
it scared me so much.
I looked at one book that used to be my mom's because my grandparents who live in Alabama sent a bunch of books that used to be my mom's to me. So I kind of inherited them, and one of them was dated like 1989 or something. And it was the complete collection of Brother Grimm's fairy tales. I guess they go around collecting fairy tales instead of writing them. So they have this giant compilation. It's somewhere around 800, 700 pages. So in there, I noticed a bunch of Disney princess stuff. I saw the Cinderella. Man, Disney really transferred that. The originals. Kind of violent. It's like, yeah, cut off your... Okay, I'm just not gonna say.
I went through a phase where I was obsessed with finding the true stories behind Disney princesses, and Disney definitely was very transformative with some of that. And speaking of transformative, this is going to be such an awkward segue. It sounded better in my head. I have a few new comics that are kind of transformative that I will lean over and grab right now. I got these at Barnes & Noble a couple days ago. We finally decided to get out of the house and go to the mall for the first time in, like, months. And I got to go to Barnes & Noble. I was very happy. I don't know if I've talked about these before, but are any of you familiar with Junji Ito?
Junji Ito? No.
Junji Ito. He is a very, very popular manga author and illustrator in Japan. And recently I found this book, which is a manga, a comic version of Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, but it was illustrated by Junji Ito, who's this very, very popular horror illustrator. His style is known to be very, very iconic. And I thought that was very cool that he got the opportunity to like put his own like visuals to the Frankenstein story. I haven't started reading that one yet. I actually got another one by him, which is his original stories. And this one's a story collection called Smash, which has a bunch of like mini stories in it of his own work. His style is very, very different from the common like big-eyed, colorful manga you'd see. It's very rarely ever colored. It's all black and white and very sketchy. But like it really stands out when he draws like creatures. His creature design, there's never anything really gory in his comics, but they're just so uncomfortable and unnerving that you feel like you feel very uncomfortable the same way you would if it was gory. And I think that's really cool. I think his art style is really amazing. And you can like look up his work pretty easily. It's J-U-N-J-I-I-T-O. And you can find his stuff online. It's very, very good. Right now I'm about halfway through Smashed. I've read up to maybe the sixth story in the book. I think there's 12. Yeah, they've all been pretty good so far.
Seems like some fun reading.
Yeah.
I'm not experienced at drawing manga. I just took a hour-long comics and drawing class every Tuesday and Thursday from September to December. So they taught us how to draw manga. It's harder than it looks, but at the same time, it's easier than it looks. It's weird. I thought it was going to be really hard for most people. They'd think it would be easy, but it's harder than it looks. But for me, I was expecting it to be, like, impossible. So it's easier than it looks. I kind of did one right here. It really doesn't look a lot like manga. It kind of looks more like my drawing style.
It's cute.
Thanks. It's kind of how I draw manga. I never really draw manga. My comic style is very different from that. Mine has much bigger mouths. Well, it depends on the personality. My faces really vary depending on the personality. They are like very outgoing and big. They might have very wide eyes and a big smile. If they're kind of quiet or shy, I make them very small mouth.
Lena, you like to draw too, right?
Yes, I do.
Lena, did you have anything you wanted to talk about today?
So when you guys were on like the topics of the Disney princesses and stuff, for some reason, even though this isn't really about the Disney princesses and stuff, I just really wanted to mention how me and my brother are watching How I Met Your Mother again. And like, it's really good.
Which character is the Disney princess?
Oh, this isn't a Disney princess show. This isn't like...
Is it Marshall? Is that his name? What's his name?
So
Lillian
Marshall are married, yeah, in the show. What? I'm confused now.
Is the Disney princess of the show?
Oh, you cut out, and then I just got confused because I heard, I think Marshall's the Disney. That's what I heard on my end, but now that I think about it, I thought that all of the characters are very interesting, and they're very interesting in their own way. Also, I just realized that I'm going off topic, but I finished the book that I mentioned a while ago, I'm pretty sure like sometime in last year, and it's called Esperanza Rising, and I remember I said that I didn't like it, but now I like it because the main character is finally an actually good, decent character.
Nice.
And like, yeah. Yeah, so like, also, we had to do a lot of assignments during the Esperanza Rising thing, and some of them I didn't understand because like we had to do like a two-voice poem about the two characters like that we're assigned. Well, we weren't assigned the characters, but we got to choose, and it was between Esperanza and one other character. And me and two other girls decided to do Esperanza and Isabel. And oh boy, was I confused for the two-voice poems. It was also very hard because, like, we had to compare and we basically had to compare and contrast them. like see what makes them different, but see what's similar for them. But my poem was very short. Also, yeah, I'm going to mute my mic now.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it okay if I share my book?
Yeah.
Thanks. So my Nana and Coach, I call my grandfather Coach. I call my grandmother Nana. I know it's odd for the coach, but it's just odd is how we roll here. So they're really nice. And so they bought me this brand new book called Many Points of Me. And the main character actually has the same name as me, Georgia, though her last name is very different. Georgia Rosenblum is her name. And so in the book, she's the daughter of a really famous artist, but her dad died about 2 years before that. And she feels like she's kind of losing sense of herself. And I haven't finished it yet. I'm not even halfway through. It's kind of long, which is good for me because if it's not long enough, I go zoop right through it. And it's really good. It's about how she finds herself. I haven't read the entire thing, so I've only read about a little bit of it. So.
And what's it called?
Many Points of Me.
I haven't heard of that one. Who's the author?
Caroline Gerder. Yeah, Caroline Gerder. Pretty sure. Not positive, but pretty sure.
Awesome. I hope you continue to enjoy it. Well, I'll quickly mention a book that I read this past week. It's a graphic novel called Catherine's War by Julia Billiet and Claire Fauvel. I might be saying their names horribly wrong. And it is a historical fiction graphic novel that's based on the author's mother's experiences in life. But as far as I can tell, it's fairly fictionalized. So it's based on stories, but not an exact biography. And it follows a young woman named Rachel Cohen, who later goes by the name Catherine, throughout a really hard period of her life during World War II. She is Jewish, and at the start of the book, she is separated from her parents, doesn't know where they are, how they are doing, and she is staying in a children's home outside of Paris. And so you get to meet the other students that she shares that space with and the teachers that are there. And she's also starting to explore her new passion for photography. She's been gifted a camera and loves taking pictures and learning how to develop them in the darkroom and capturing what she sees around her, the people that she spends her time with and interacts with. And unfortunately, due to World War II and her being Jewish and several other students being Jewish at the school, for a while they try to hide them within the school or hide the fact that they're Jewish by having them change their names and go by non-Jewish sounding names. But at some point they realize that they need to move the students to another location to make sure that they're safe. And so the story follows her as she leaves the school and moves to a new temporary home. And she ends up having more than one temporary home along the way. But throughout this, she still has her camera and is still taking pictures and capturing what she sees around her and getting to know the people that she stays with. And so even though it's like a tough topic, it's still like a really lovely story. And I wish I could see more of the photographs. There are some photographs of her mother's that are shared at the end of the book. And you see the sort of drawn versions of those photographs in the story. But I would definitely love to see more of the photographs. I'm not sure how big the collection is, but I have to see if I can track any of those down. I don't know if maybe the author's page has more. But yeah, it's a really nice graphic novel. I highly suggested, especially if you like historic fiction or are interested in photography. So that's my most recent read for our age group that we try to talk about books about mostly. On the topic of Disney princesses too, I did recently read a retelling of The Little Mermaid, which is that Hans Christian Andersen or is that Grimm? I can't remember.
The Little Mermaid is Hans Christian Andersen.
Yeah. So it's a retelling of that story that's illustrated by Jerry Pinkney, who is an award-winning, amazing illustrator. It's really beautiful. And I think he has a little twist on it too. It's not as like dark as the original, but it's not as light and fluffy as the Disney one. So it's somewhere in between. And I really liked it. There's a lot of amazing fairy tale adaptations that we have in our collection at the library. There's some that are like funny and like have a real like big twist to them. And then there's some that are pretty true to the original. And then there's also some of the Disney ones. Those are not my favorite ones. I love the Disney movies, but oh, the books, not my favorites. But kids love them. So that's that. But anyways, we're just about out of time for today. But we hope everyone out there listening has a great week with lots of quality reading time. We'll be back next week to talk about some more books. And in the meantime, happy reading.
Happy reading.
Snow White, it's gonna be alright, it's gonna be alright. time to get up and stomp your feet. To this great foot-stomping Transylvanian beat. Start nice and slow.
One, two.
Then speed up more.
One, two, three, four.
Then stomp away.
One,
cause
two,
we're about
three,
to
four,
find out
five,
the number of
so
the day.
What's the number? Stop, stop. What's the number? Stop, stop. What is the number?
The number of the day rhymes with hen and pen. The number of the day is... 10.
WGXC turns 10 this February, and our 10th anniversary pledge drive is coming to you soon.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10.
We're asking you to become a sustaining supporter to make sure the community has access to its own airwaves for another 10 years of community broadcasting.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
If you like what you hear on WGXC, make a donation at WGXC.org and make it a sustaining donation. Something like 17 cents a day or $5 a month will help keep community radio on the airwaves. At least this one sliver, 90.7 FM, where all are welcome. WGXC.org/donate.
10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 tiny turtles on the telephone talking with the grocery men. We would like some lettuce. Will you send us 10 heads, please? And 10 sweet potatoes and 10 rutabagas with the dimples on the knees. And send us 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 big party jokes. 10 eggplants over easy. That's one of our little jokes. 10 leafy, leafy collard greens. And please make sure they're washed. Light up our eyes, brighten our lives with 10 banana squash. And we'll eat 10 cans of black-eyed peas. They give you good, strong muscles. 10 of those tasty sprouts, the ones that they call Brussels. We also like 10 mangoes, they're the favorite of our sister Gert. And one last thing, please do include 10 apples for dessert.
10.
It's WGXC's 10th anniversary this February. And all year, we will be celebrating 10 years of community voices on the radio. We'll have a special live broadcast and performance May 26th at the Greenville Drive-In. And if you become a sustaining supporter or increase your sustaining support of WGXC during the February pledge drive, we'll give you a ticket if you want for the Greenville Drive-In show May 26th at 7:30 p.m. with Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields performing, Anna Frizz also performing, Catskills' Brian DeWan, Jen Cutler and Jess Spear also performing, more artists to be announced at the WGXC 10th anniversary performance, the Greenville Drive-In, May 26th. And if you become a sustaining supporter for the first time during WGXC's February pledge drive or increase your sustaining support of the community radio station, you can get a ticket to the Greenville Drive-In show with Stephen Merritt, Anna Frizz, Brian DeWan, Jen Cutler, Jess Spear, and more May 26th at the Greenville Drive-In for WGXC 90.7 FM.
10. 10. 10. Ten. Ten. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Hello, I'm Garrett McCary, and with me today is members of the Troy Foundry Theater, the artistic director, David Girard, and the producing executive director, Emily Curo. And
Hello.
We're going to be talking about what you're calling a digital gala event. Thank you for not coming on Saturday, February 27th at 7 p.m. So why don't you tell us just a brief summary of what the organization does?
Well, we're kind of a group of like-minded artists, a lot of performers, but we're not necessarily all traditionally actors. We tend to have a smorgasbord of different disciplines kind of coming together. We are a very much a site-specific and immersive company. We work in and produce out of a lot of historic places in and around Troy. And we kind of conjure that a kind of energy that is used to sort of meld something together out of the shapeless. That's sort of the idea of the foundry. We tend to work from a place that is very simple at the start, something thematically, and build work from the ground up using a lot of devising creating methodologies. We have a really strong company. We've got some new people in our ranks that we'll be sort of introducing in some ways through the digital gala, but also a lot of faces that folks have seen before.
We're also a not-for-profit, so that's a big part